Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the latest warnings by a senior Israeli intelligence official that the country's leaders, Netanyahu and Barak, are intent on a war with Iran. The former head of Shin Bet stated publicly that, "I do not believe in a leadership that makes decisions based on messianic feelings. I have seen them up close. They are not messiahs, these two. And they are not the people I personally trust to lead Israel into such an event." Former CIA officer Robert Baer joins us to discuss this latest broadside from Israel's alarmed intelligence and military leaders. Then we'll look into the growing dissent in China with the escape of a prominent dissident now believed to be holed up in the U.S. embassy. China expert Perry Link joins us. He edited the Tiananmen papers that were leaked by a high-level Chinese official and led to Perry Link being blacklisted by the Chinese government. We will discuss this very public challenge to China's police state on the eve of Secretary Clinton's arrival for talks with the Chinese leadership. Then finally, we will speak with Robert Draper, the author of a news-making new book about the current House of Representatives who are held at a record low level of disrepute, Do Not Ask What Good We Do. Among the revelations in the book is a meeting that took place with Eric Cantor and other Republican leaders on the day of President Obama's inauguration, where the participants plotted to destroy the newly sworn-in presidency. And just before we begin, there's a couple of corrections I need to make. One is in regard to the Trayvon Martin story. I mentioned that Trayvon Martin's body was held for 3 days by the police in Sanford. That's true. However, apparently the parents were informed after one whole day of anguish. The next day they were allowed to come to the police station and see the body. The body, of course, was held for 3 days and drug tested, which was not what happened to George Zimmerman. So still pretty outrageous. But the other story that needs real correcting, that was last Thursday's story. Amira Woods, from the co-director of Foreign Policy and Focus at the Institute for Policy Studies, stated in the interview that the war criminal that was just charged by the International Criminal Court, Charles Taylor, was sprung from a U.S. prison by the CIA and was a CIA asset. However, a front-page story in the Boston Globe was printed as a front-page retraction to this story. And just reading from the retraction by the Boston Globe, the source of this connection between Taylor and the CIA, the Globe says that on a front-page story on January the 17th drew unsupported conclusions and significantly overstepped available evidence when it described former Liberian President Charles Taylor as having worked with U.S. spy agencies as a sought-after source. The story, based on a response by the U.S. Defense Intelligence Agency to a long-pending records request by the Globe, described the agency's response as having confirmed its agents and CIA agents worked with Taylor beginning in the 1980s. But the agency offered no such confirmation. There has long been speculation that Taylor had such a role, speculation fueled in part by Taylor's own suggestion in trial testimony that his 1985 escape from prison in Plymouth, Massachusetts, may have been facilitated by CIA operatives. But Taylor, now standing trial before the UN Special Court on charges of rape, murder, and other offenses, denies he was ever a source for or worked for U.S. intelligence. The Globe had no adequate basis for asserting otherwise, and the story should not have run in this form. So that's the retraction, and so I apologize but at the time I was skeptical of what Amira Woods was saying, because after all, Charles Taylor did end up working with Gaddafi in a arms for diamonds smuggling racket, along with the butchering of 300,000 Sierra Leoneans and Liberians. Joining us now is Robert Baer, a veteran CIA operations officer who served in various Middle East countries, including Iraq and Lebanon. He's the author of 3 New York Times bestsellers, See No Evil, which was made into the movie Syriana, Sleeping with the Devil, and The Devil We Know, Dealing with the New Iranian Superpower. His latest book, co-written with his wife Dana, is The Company We Keep, A Husband and Wife, True Life Spy Story. Welcome to Background Briefing, Robert Baer.
Great to be back.
And just to, before we get into the Israel and Syria, do you have any comments on the Charles Taylor story, since you used to work for the CIA?
Well, yeah, it's silly. You know, you've got to understand that the United States, when it violates American law or international law, is authorized to do so by the Department of Justice and the White House. We saw that with the torture, the waterboarding. That was completely cleared by the Department of Justice, the drone attacks, and I could go on and on. You know the story. It is never, I've never seen the CIA, you know, with the exception, I suppose, in the 60s or so, you know, breaking American law by breaking somebody out of prison. It's just not the CIA, I know. And I think Taylor is using gray mail to get him out of this trial. And it's a typical defense for people. You know, fallback of the CIA told me to do it. And I think the court, The Hague, knew much better than that. And in addition, he was never an asset. The CIA is almost obligated to keep in touch with everybody in the world. You know, from the mafia to warlords anywhere, simply to see what sort of intelligence they can acquire from these people, from the dark side, if you like. And that's what they do. They did it in Africa. Sometimes it pays off, but, you know, the thing that always happens is it gets blamed for these people's actions. And it's actually made it very gun-shy that, you know, it's as the years go by, it stops meeting people like Charles Taylor, no matter what they have to say. You know, and I'll leave it up to the listeners whether we're better off or not.
Well, let's turn to Israel, because you and I had a discussion over a year ago, shortly after the former head of Mossad, Meir Dagan, made some statements of alarm that Netanyahu was bent on attacking Iran, and which Meir Dagan thought would be catastrophic. And that report went all viral over the Middle East on Al Jazeera, other Arab, and a lot of Israeli coverage as well in Haaretz and Ynet and in the broader Israeli media. You got a lot of criticism for it at the time.
I call it incoming shelling myself, but it's me.
I know, but I mean, it's everything that we said has been verified in spades now. And now, just a few days ago, the former head of Shin Bet, the country's equivalent of the FBI, went public and stated that, "I do not believe in a leadership that makes decisions based on messianic feelings. I have seen them up close," referring to Netanyahu and Barak. "They are not messiahs, these two, and they are not the people I personally trust to lead Israel into such an event," meaning a war against Iran. That's pretty extraordinary, don't you think?
Oh, I find it completely alarming. You know, let me state this. Netanyahu would not be using senior intelligence officials, even if they are retired, to send, you know, warnings to Iran, either do this or we're going to attack. It's just Israeli politics doesn't work that way.
So in other words, it's not a giant bluff. Is that what you're saying?
No, it can't be. It's just, it's not plausible. It undermines the authority of the prime minister. It's damaging to him. And he's not going to use people like this to undermine his credibility by calling messianic and sending warnings to Iran. It's just not plausible. The same thing wouldn't happen in the United States. So what concerns me is the American military, President Obama, a lot of the Israeli military have said that it is unwise to attack Iran at this point, bomb it, either limited or a wider conflict. The blowback would be incredible through the Gulf, in Lebanon, in Syria, even in Egypt. So for somebody like this to come out, and somebody who's a very wise voice, you know, Shin Bet is a very serious organization. This is it's not that politicized. To come out and say this, you know, a couple months ago I said, listen, attack's off the table. It's finished. But now I'm beginning to wonder that the Bibi has, you know, is saying, listen, the world doesn't understand Iran, and I have a historical role to stop it from threatening Israel, and I'm going to go ahead and bomb. And he's got the authority with a couple political parties, the conservatives, to put together an attack on Iran. And I think he just would ignore the United States and ignore this president.
Well, I mentioned when we spoke over a year ago about Admar Dagan, the former head of Mossad, and now we have Shin Bet. But we also had just very recently Lieutenant General Benny Gantz, the equivalent of the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, saying that he thought that the Iranian leadership weren't pursuing a nuclear weapon at this point. And then you have last month, Shaul Mufaz, the former military chief and defense minister, who was born in Iran, as a matter of fact, saying that Netanyahu has a ghetto mentality. Dan Halutz, who led the military from 2005 to 2007, criticized Netanyahu last month for invoking Holocaust imagery and for his military bellicosity, saying, "We are not the kings of the world. We should remember who we are." So there's a whole list of people speaking up. If this were happening in the United States, this would be headline news everywhere. This people of this caliber, of this seniority, in concert criticizing a sitting government.
Well, I think we're missing the message here in the United States. You know, Americans are just fed up with wars in the Middle East. You know, you bring up the Middle East for most people, and their eyes glaze over. They say, "Oh, come on, another war." It's just not reasonable, you know, and I think we're just sort of, you know, distracted by the economy. We're distracted by a lot of other issues, but for Israel, for these generals to come out, this is very, very serious, and I don't think people are going to pay attention unless there's an attack, and I right now find it so improbable that we would be even coming close to going into another war in the Middle East, that I find it difficult to believe. But every time, you know, I've tucked it away in my consciousness, it always seems to come back. You know, so it's maybe better than 50%.
Well, Yuval,
this is speculation, by the way, Ian.
Right, I understand. But the Shin Bet leader, or former leader, just recently retired, Yuval Diskin, also went on to attack the Netanyahu government for not actively pursuing peace with the Palestinians. It seems to me that that's just a rather flagrant strategy on Netanyahu's part. As long as he's talking about Iran, he's not talking about the Palestinians, right?
He's distracted Washington, too, because Washington right now doesn't have time to deal with the Palestinians. You know, we have to worry about Afghanistan, getting out, you know, and getting out in the best way we can. So to bring up the Palestinian issue, we can only take two crises in the Middle East at once, as you know. And the Palestinian one is not something this White House can take on. It would just get creamed in the Republican House and Senate. You know, it just and go on and on. It's not something to bring up. So I think, you know, Netanyahu is gauging American politics every single day, and to see what he can get away with. But if he's a believer at the same time, he will go. And I don't think most Israelis want an attack on Iran either, because they know that Hezbollah would cover Israel in rockets.
Sure. Well, 80%. In a recent poll, 81% of Israelis oppose a solo attack on Iran, but two-thirds of Israelis would support military action if coordinated with the United States. Again, I'm speaking with Robert Baer, veteran CIA operations officer, who served in various Middle Eastern countries, including Iraq and Lebanon. Now, something quite interesting happened recently, Robert Baer. You mentioned Netanyahu involved in U.S. domestic politics, not to mention this election year. The New York Times recently ran an extensive article outlining a long and enduring friendship that Netanyahu has had with Romney, going back to their early days when they both graduated, one from MIT and one from Harvard, joined the same firm together as venture capitalists, and were the two rising stars in the class, and have forged a long friendship. This New York Times article prompted Israel's ambassador Michael Oren to New York Times print a rebuttal, where Ambassador Oren insisted that Israel does not interfere in U.S. elections. But this charge was not even made in the New York Times article, so that shows you a certain sensitivity. My sense is that is an absurdity, that if you understand the role of Sheldon Adelson, he has a newspaper and a television, Fox-like television network in Israel. His newspaper is free giveaway newspaper, entirely devoted to promoting Netanyahu. And Adelson single-handedly kept Gingrich in the race to split the anti-Romney ticket. So to my mind, and is that Gingrich has been a useful idiot for Adelson, and you can't help feeling that Netanyahu's fingerprints are there, and sure, they have been influencing the American election.
Well, you know, I mean, I think, you know, the Jewish Americans don't want to be accused of hijacking American foreign policy. But the fact is, it is hijackable. I mean, let's go back to the Iraqi invasion. It wasn't the Israelis that hijacked us into this war in Iraq. It was Iraqi exiles like Ahmad Chalabi. So, yes, American foreign policy is for sale, and it depends on the issue, how sensitive it is. And, you know, I don't think, you know, I mean, there's most Israelis, as you said, don't want an attack, and most American supporters of Israel probably don't want an attack. It's the crazies, but the crazies at the margin are able to hijack American policy. And I think the Israeli ambassador feels this sensitivity because he does not want this to look like an Israeli war. It's impossible to do, but I can see where the sensitivities are. And, you know, we have to be fair to Israel in the sense they're in a bad neighborhood. We've got to deal in the facts in this. You've got Egypt that's not going particularly well. You've got Syria. They may want to even get rid of the Bashar government, right? But they don't know what's coming next. And then you've got Lebanon with Hezbollah and all those rockets. And you know, every day they are facing questions of survival. So you can see the motivation, whether you agree with it or not, on Bibi's part.
Well, things are, and your point's well taken, but things are obviously changing rapidly. Right next door in Lebanon, for example, I don't normally quote Friedman, the New York Times reporter, who was one of the cheerleaders for the Iraq War, but he's been in Lebanon saying that Hezbollah is having a hard time now because of its support for the Assad clique, that both the Assads and Hezbollah have gotten their credentials based upon being the ones that confront Israel, and those credentials are now.
You know, absolutely right. I mean, Hezbollah rose. It was a popular movement. We can call it a terrorist movement if we like, but it's also a popular movement. And it had the support of most Lebanese. Now, all of a sudden, they're supporting, you know, massacring people in the streets of Syria. So much for their revolutionary credentials. And by the way, this is a key point of American foreign policy, is telling the Israelis, look, don't bomb. Watch what's going to happen in Damascus. Watch what's going to happen with Hezbollah. We can undermine both Bashar and Hezbollah, and you can still get your way without a war. Of course, the jury is out on what's going to happen in Syria, but there is a certain point to that. But on the other hand, it's, you know, what scares me is with declining Iranian influence, even with the Palestinians, or that they've taken a back seat to the Arab Spring, they become something more of a dangerous force in the Middle East, less responsible, and they're worried about their own future. And then you add that to the sanction on oils, it's getting cut way back, and you've got a popular movement there, and they have an incentive almost, the regime, and I'm talking about Ayatollah Khamenei, to provoke an attack in a sense. You know, what do they care if a couple of their nuclear facilities are blown up? I mean, it would be an enormous surge of support for the regime, or they would be given the justification to crack down on the dissidents in Iran. And this is the kind of logic of war in the Middle East that you really got to watch. It may not seem rational, but we're not that far away.
Well, Robert Baer, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Robert Behrer, veteran CIA operations officer who served in various Middle Eastern countries, including Iraq and Lebanon. He's the author of three New York Times bestsellers, See No Evil, which was made into the movie Syriana, Sleeping with the Devil, and The Devil We Know, Dealing with the New Iranian Superpower. His latest book, co-written with his wife Dana, is The Company We Keep, a husband and wife true life spy story. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking about the growing dissent in China. And he hears his master's voice. He hears the call.